So, you got another Liberty Conspiracy podcast to listen to, huh? All right, well, we open with the Asian Dub Foundation.
Fly over, fly over. Sing! Fly over, fly over. Chant! Fly over, fly over.
Stop on the gas, kick down the accelerator.
Sing! Fly over, fly over.
The Transmetropolitan, get out of my way. There ain't enough hours in my day. The city's on fire in the pouring rain. Steam is rising faster than a runaway train.
In the ballad on the shishi by computers and PCs. The bloody turf war military for the Gucci. I kill him behind the willy way, never going home. Skinniness, naughtiness of the transit zone.
Fly over, fly over.
Stop and niggas get down in your accelerator.
Fly over.
Fly over, don't wanna get mad, I'm the one that get captured. Fly over, fly over. Step on the gas, get down in your accelerator. Fly over, fly over. Don't wanna get mad, I'm the one that get captured.
This is a great song from their album Tank. I love the Asian Dub Foundation, a bunch of guys from England. They've had different members rotating, going in and out. It's a really cool band. Look them up, Asian Dub Foundation. Love those guys. And this is a song called Flyover. And this tune always makes me think of taking the train from London down to Brighton for some reason. Because I think they mentioned South Kensington. And I'm like, oh man, it just gives me that imagery. I'm Gardner Goldsmith. Thanks very much for joining us. I hope you can find our podcast at iTunes or at Podomatic or at other websites. You can go to the Liberty Conspiracy website and check them out there. I'm giving you a quick introduction. I've got to talk over some of the music, I'm afraid, but I'll get right back to it to let you know that this podcast is the first of two that will give you information about Dick Cheney having the gall to call Edward Snowden a traitor. Yeah. Oh, man. So we get into that. And then I spent a lot of time taking up that sports vein. And since basketball's happening and hockey's happening, the night that I recorded this, the Heat and the San Antonio Spurs were playing a game for the finals in the NBA. And I love the NBA. It's fantastic. Or as Chevy Chase said, the NBA, it's pretty good. But anyway, I love the NBA. But the question, as a person who is devoted to liberty, that arises is, you say, for whom do I root when both teams try to suckle off the government teat? All right, so that's what I'll lay out for you. Go to our website. Don't forget, we count on your support and all that other stuff, so think about it. Get back to Asian Dub Foundation, baby.
Fly over, fly over.
Love the way this opens up. Be seeing you.
I said, you know this is a place to be. You know it's always been a place to be. You know it's always been a place to be. I said, you know this is a place to be. I turned them up to London City. Fly over, fly over. Step on the gas, get down in your accelerator. Fly over, fly over. I wanna get back down, I wanna get captured. I wanna be down to the station and the show call me tight. Go where there's plenty of light. Asking for direction, but I'll tell you the wrong way. You know there's never time. You know there's never enough hours in a day. You know there's never enough hours in a day. In a day, in a day.
The city is blind, but it will not slow down. The drive for destruction is the heaviest sound.
There is, of course, more and more information about this guy Snowden and what the politicians think of him. And it really does amaze me, as Brett and I were discussing, because it's not just most of the political class. You know, I expected this. Most of the Democrats are going to paint Edward Snowden, who revealed the PRISM program and is hiding in Hong Kong. Not hiding, but he's looking for sanctuary in Hong Kong so he can continue discussing this and reveal wrongdoing. I figured that most of the Democrats would demonize this guy, and most of the Republicans would demonize him as well, because well, you know, they want to continue surveilling people. And, of course, the Democrats, they want Obama to look like a saint. But it's clear this is an absolute violation of the Fourth Amendment. It's not only a violation of the FISA law itself is a violation of the Fourth Amendment because you have to specify the individuals whom you're going to be surveilling.
Edward Snowden.
So I want to go now to Fox News Sunday with the great truth teller, the good guy who saves us all so much. All the time. When he was vice president, he was just a hero and saved us from such terrorism. Let's go with Dick Cheney being interviewed on Fox News Sunday.
The 29-year-old private contractor who disclosed these programs to the world. Here's how he justified his actions.
Eventually, you realize that these things need to be determined by the public, not by somebody who was simply hired by the government. When you are subverting the power of government, that's a fundamentally dangerous thing to democracy.
What do you think of Edward Snowden?
I think he's a traitor. I think he has committed crimes, in effect, by violating agreements, given the position he had. He was a contractor employee, but he obviously had been granted top secret clearance. And I think it's one of the worst occasions in my memory of somebody with access to classified information doing enormous damage to the national security interests of the United States.
We believe that Snowden is still in Hong Kong and apparently giving the Chinese information about alleged U.S. cyber hacking into Chinese computers. A couple of questions. Do you think he was a spy all along for the Chinese? Do you think he's using this information to try to buy asylum from the Chinese? And how firm should the U.S. government be with the Chinese about turning this guy back to us?
Well, I'm deeply suspicious, obviously, because he went to China. That's not a place where you'd ordinarily want to go if you're interested in freedom and liberty and so forth.
Unless, of course, politicians who have broken their oaths to the Constitution over and over and over again, like Dick Cheney, who have, lied to try to convince Americans that they had to support the United States military being sent in a non-war situation, which is unconstitutional, to a foreign land called Iraq. Yeah, you know, unless you're worried that guys of your ilk, Dick Cheney, might be out to either arrest you or kill you. You know, like one of the editors of the Atlantic Monthly mentioned he overheard a couple guys in the NSA mentioning that this guy Snowden should just be disappeared. Right? Yes.
So it raises questions whether or not he had that kind of connection before he did this. The other concern I have is whether or not he had help from inside the agency. That is to say, was there somebody else in NSA who had access to a lot of this stuff and passed it to him? That's presumably one of the things I'll look at in the course of the investigation.
So, of course, we have to make sure that we demonize the messenger. We use character assassination and put up all sorts of questions about this man, and we don't spend any time, no time at all, in any way whatsoever, about what's really at issue. For a man who swore an oath to uphold the Constitution, Dick Cheney, and of course urinated all over it, I guess we should expect that. We got a special song for him coming up in just a little while. I hope you'll keep it right here, Liberty Conspiracy Radio.
Calling on a phone, I've got no time to be alone. Summer coming at me all the time. You better think I lose my mind, 'cause I'm stranded on my own. Stranded far from home. Alright, I'm riding on a midnight train, but everybody does me the same. The subway light is not a reflection. I'm lost, babe, I've got no direction. And I'm stranded on my own. Stranded far from home. Alright. Stranded, I'm so far from home. Stranded, yeah, I'm on my own. Stranded,
landed. You gotta leave me alone, cause I'm stranded on my own. Stranded, far from home. Come on. Does a man run at you? Made a man thing I can't do. You lost your mind, stuck in a world. Your honey's such a stupid girl. Now I'm stranded on my own. Stranded far from home. But come on. Stranded, I'm so far from home. Stranded, yeah, I'm on my own. Stranded, you gotta leave me alone. Cause I'm stranded on my own. Stranded far from home. All right. Living in a world insane. They cut us and heart us and brain. But they don't have love with her. Your baby don't know how it hurts to be stranded on your own. Stranded far from home. All right. Stranded, I'm so far from home. Stranded, yeah, I'm on my own. Stranded, you got to be me alone. Come on. Stranded, I'm so far from home. Stranded, yeah, I'm on my own. Stranded, you gotta leave me alone, cause I'm stranded on my own. Stranded.
Start with Edward Snowden, a 29-year-old private contractor who disclosed these programs to the world. Here's how he justified his actions.
Eventually, you realize that these things need to be determined by the public, not by somebody who was simply hired by the government. When you are subverting the power of government, that's a fundamentally dangerous thing to democracy.
What do you think of Edward Snowden?
I think he's a traitor. I think he has committed crimes, in effect, by violating agreements, given the position he had. He was a contractor employee, but he obviously had been granted the top secret clearance. And I think it's one of the worst occasions in my memory of somebody with access to classified information doing enormous damage to the national security interests of the United States.
We believe the Snowden is still in Hong Kong and apparently giving the Chinese information about alleged U.S. cyber hacking in the Chinese computer. A couple of things. Do you think he was a spy going for the Chinese? Do you think he's using this information to try to buy asylum from the Chinese? And how firm did the U.S. government be with the Chinese by turning this guy back?
Well, I'm deeply suspicious.
Yes, indeedy. Welcome back to Liberty Conspiracy Radio. Gardner Goldsmith here with you. Good to have you along for the ride. And I had to play the Sex Pistols because, I mean, what can you do? You listen to Dick Cheney, the guy who was one of the central guys for passing off a bold-faced lie on top of the executive branch asking Congress to openly defy the U.S. Constitution, and try to get a war going that is a non-war. Well, what can you say? The bells go off. You got to stop these guys and listen to the Sex Pistols. That's all you can do. They're liars. And he's a guy who is trying to tell us that Snowden is a traitor. He's a guy trying to tell us that Snowden is a traitor. That's just great. It's amazing to me. So he's the Vice President of the United States who works with the President to get Congress to send troops contrary to what the Constitution orders, which is a declaration of war, for reasons that they sell to the American people, which are bogus. They keep the troops there for years. The next president takes over, then adopts the power to assassinate people without any trial. Still no declaration of war. Continues renditions and tortures. Continues Gitmo. And a guy who starts to see how that same government under Barack Obama is conducting eavesdropping on Americans, he's the traitor. He's the traitor. And then Dick Cheney has the gall to say,
well, I think that I think we have to look at his reasons for going to China. Why China? If you want to be free, why would you want to go to China?
Yeah, like I said, Dick, maybe it's possible that a-holes like you, who, you know, lied to get Americans to support an unconstitutional military conflict that is an undeclared war, which means you should have been impeached, Bush should have been impeached, you all should have been removed from office. It's pretty clear, the Constitution, let me see. Oh yeah, I can just reach over and pull it out and start reading it. Funny. Article 1, the Congress shall have the power to declare war. Weird. They can't declare use of military force. It's not in the Constitution. Isn't that funny? Anyway, and you know they bothered to write the Ninth Amendment and the Tenth Amendment to say the things that have not been clearly delineated in the Constitution are not powers granted to the federal government, Dick. Isn't that weird? I know. Oh, wait. Maybe I'm a traitor for pointing that out. I don't know. I don't really care. Because the Constitution hasn't done much to really support my freedoms, buddy, because of people like you. That's great. Okay, so with Dick Cheney stating that, that's a little bit of information from our news. Another piece of information to give you real quick. If you haven't already heard, just like the EU, as Soph mentioned to us last week, the EU lifted its ban on bringing weapons to the Syrian rebels. The United States government now is going to be bringing weapons to the Syrian rebels. They've already been bringing weapons to the Syrian rebels. Now it's just going to be bold-faced, right? And so there'll be lots of money for the military contractors and things like that. So, okay, have a great time if you work for the military contractors. Enjoy it. Pat your children while the United States continues to shovel off weapons of death to foreign nations. Great going. Now, what I find interesting is at the same time that that's happening, the government of Turkey is on the seesaw. Why? Because there are rebels and protesters who want the government of Turkey to change. Now, which side is the United States government supporting there? Well, that's weird. They're not supporting the people who want change and more freedom. They're supporting the Turkish government, which has just imposed all sorts of really radical Islamic evil policies that we always hear are so bad. And yet the people who want change aren't being supported by the U.S. government or the EU. Because why? Yeah, that's right. Because the Turkish president is working with the U.S. government and has been for a while to funnel weapons into Syria and to try to make it look like the Syrians need to have some sort of change of government. Not the Turkish government. You see, that government's okay because they're working with the U.S. So yeah, people are protesting that, but just look the other way. No. Resolution to help those people? No. We got to help the other guys because Assad, see? Assad. I don't know. I just think it's an amazing double standard, needs to be brought up, and it's just something in the news you say to yourself, you know, I hope I'm not the only one who sees this, right? I don't think I am, but I hope I'm not. And I had to bring that up. If you watch, for example, if you watch ABC News tonight, not once do they happen to mention. It's almost as if these things are just like isolated weather events. And in another part of the world, in Syria, this happened. Well, they're right next to each other, dummy. What do you think?
You know, the ABC News anchor is like, well, in Turkey today, da-da-da-da-da. Like, yeah, that's exactly right. Yeah, there's all sorts of protests in Turkey, and people aren't happy, and they're putting them down with a lot of violence and things like that, and yet the U.S. and the Turkish government are with each other. Yeah. Why? To overthrow the bad government of Syria. There you go. Yeah. QED. Yeah, that's it. Mm-hmm. It's like the Babel fish, you know, proves the non-existence of God. QED. All right, when we return, I've got a couple stories that I want to mention. I posted some questions over at Facebook and Twitter. And as I was getting ready for the show tonight, I thought you would appreciate this. We're going to go a little light right now, talk about the NBA playoffs. I think it's all tied up 6-6 right now in the games. That, you know, the Spurs have won 6, Miami Heat have won 6. It's great. We'll talk about that and freedom when we return.
Liberty Conspiracy Radio. Hey, thanks very much for being with us on a Sunday night. It's all sorts of stuff going on. Everybody's getting together in Lancaster. Basketball's happening, and you and I are together. So just keep this volume up. Turn the volume down if you're watching sports stuff, and hang out with us. Go to Liberty Conspiracy website, and you know it's called libertyconspiracy.com. So it should be pretty straightforward to find, even if you have spent time working for the government. I know, it's tough on the brain, it knocks you around a little bit, but we're here to support you, baby. And we're here to celebrate sports time. Yeah.
I was 7 years old when I got my first pair, and I stepped outside, and I was like, Mama, this air bubble right here, it's gonna make me fly. I hit that court, and when I jumped, I jumped. I swear I got so high. I touched the net. Mom, I touched the net. This is the best day of my life. Air Maxes were next. That air bubbled, that mesh. The box, the smell, the stuffing, the tread in school. I was so cool, I knew that I couldn't crease them. My friends couldn't afford them. Four stripes on their Adidas. On the court, I wasn't the best, but my kicks were like the pros, yo. Stick out my tongue so everyone could see that logo. Nike Air Flight foot bag was so dope. And then my friend Carlos's brother got murdered for his fours. Whoa. See, he just wanted his jump shot, but they wanted to start a cop, though. Didn't want to get caught from Genesee Park
yeah,
to
we're
Obello.
NBA, baby. NBA all the way out on the courts.
I was trying to fly without leaving the ground, because I wanted to be like Mike, right? Wanted to be him.
I want to be like Mike, baby. Oh, yeah. So let's talk about the NBA, shall we? Oh, yeah. The San Antonio Spurs. San Antonio, home of the great San Antonio Suns, the Sons of Hercules, and the Miami Heat. Miami, home of the great band that I don't really know, but, you know, there's the Miami Sound Machine. Well, anyway, so the Miami Heat, good team, really good team. San Antonio Spurs, good team, you know. I have, like I said, I got no vested interest in either one of these teams. I like them both. I like basketball. But there's something else to this that I'm thinking about. So what I did was I posted over at Twitter, right? I posted it to Twitter thing, you know, and there's so many other ways to interact, you know, this social media stuff. It's like crazy, you know? And I posted on Facebook and I said, hey, you guys, I was like Rita Moreno in the beginning of Electric Company. I said, hey, you guys, you know? So I was like, all right, so what's the word, Thunderbird, you know? And so I said, which team do you want to see win? And my friend Paul, I said, you know, Spurs or the Heat. And he said, my friend Paul, of course, he chose right. He said, Bruins. Right? Then my friend Jay, he one-upped them, right? Okay. So he goes, Manchester United. Yay! Woo! Yeah. And then, well, you know, my friend Sean, he rocks. He goes, you know, that Lionel Messi plays for that one. And I was like, Lionel Richie? You know, hello? Anyway, so what I've decided to do is start talking to you a little bit about another factor that I brought into the discussion. I said, fans of peace and economic freedom might want to think about some of these NBA teams a little differently. And this is tough because I like basketball, right? I like Mike. I want to be like Mike, you know? Tongue hanging out of my mouth. Yeah. So I said, both teams have sucked off of the public trough, taxpayers, to get what they want. How so? How so, G-Man? How so? Okay. Here's our first story. This one goes back Miami, you know, June 15th, 2013. Marlins, then Dolphins, now the Miami Heat want our tax dollars. This is by Genius of Despair from eyeonmiami.blogspot.com. The stadiums and arenas handouts are going to break the Miami-Dade County Bank. Now the Miami Heat are asking for our tax dollars. Come on, Mickey Arison. As of March 13th, your net worth was 5.7 billion Federal Reserve notes. Give the taxpayers a break. Stop with the begging. Yeah, see, it's not necessarily begging when you're asking the government to shake down people. I don't look at that as begging. The Miami Herald wrote, and pay attention to the first paragraph, he writes, Miami-Dade pays the arena 6.4 million Federal Reserve notes a year under a deal that runs through 2029 in exchange for building and financing the $360 million arena on county land. Owner Mickey Arison negotiated an agreement that includes the yearly subsidy and a profit-sharing formula that has yet to deliver any money
for Miami-Dade. And this one. Last fall, Heat executives formally exercised their right to negotiate a 10-year extension with the county while the team technically rents space from the arena. Both business entities are part of the corporate umbrella run by owner Arison, the CEO of Carnival Cruise Lines. Public dollars are sure to be a sticking point in the talks. Lopez said to fund the Heat's planned upgrades. Now, they already have a deal. They want the planned upgrades. Miami-Dade may need to increase its current subsidy to as much as $17 million a year. The $17 million. Okay? Now, so that would mean I really should root for San Antonio, right? San Antonio, they're not doing that. Besides, the Sons of Hercules come from stinking San Antonio, right? Yeah, well, yeah, you can't jump from the top of the lane unless you've been running real hard. And we're running real hard on the news. So here it is. This one goes all the way back to 1999. And guess what? It came to pass. And so it came to pass that the San Antonio Spurs won a new arena to go with their newly won NBA championship. Bexar County residents will decide Tuesday, this is in 1999, whether to give it to them when they vote on raising hotel and rental car taxes to help fund a $175 million basketball arena. Meanwhile, Harris County voters are being asked whether they want to commit existing hotel and rental car taxes to fund half of a $160 million downtown arena for the Houston Rockets. That's the other team. Campaigns surrounding the arena plans in both cities are well financed, with supporters insisting that the basketball teams need modern, more lucrative buildings, while opponents complain that the deals are basically taxpayer subsidies of private businesses.
Yeah.
Okay, let's stop there. By the way, this did happen. That was from 1999. It happened. I looked it up. So, let's enter a new world. We'll go from the black and white to the color of Oz, right? And let's start talking about subsidizing sports teams and sports arenas, right? Now, you know, we can feel the vibrations like, no, not good. Bad things. This isn't right. But there's more to it than that. There are the arguments that they make about how it will be an economic boon to the area. But let me just say this. And I really should have said this at the preface to start off, to let you know, oh, I'm such a bright guy. I figured this all out. If you have a team in your city that wins a championship, that's probably one of the most disastrous things a taxpayer in that city will hear. Because the minute a team wins a championship, invariably, and I'm not saying universally, but, you know, I'm just using rhetoric here. Invariably, almost all the time. See, they're not really the same. So I'll just say almost all the time. But invariably sounds a lot better, right? But anyway, almost all the time, when your city team wins, what do they want? They want a new arena. And if they don't get the new arena from you guys, they're going to leave the city. They got to have it. So you got to tax everybody who doesn't even care about sports. Besides, it'll help their businesses, right? Yeah, we'll see. We'll give you the info when we return. Liberty Conspiracy Radio.
That's us. It's Liberty Conspiracy Radio on, you got it, LRN.FM. Hope you go to libertyconspiracy.com and be a fellow conspirator for freedom. I'm Gardner Goldsmith, and thank you very much for joining us. And I'm going to say and a few more times. Yeah, I hope you go to the website, and don't forget our podcasts are available at Podomatic and at iTunes. Thank you once more for making us the number 3 podcast at Podomatic. Love it. Liking it, baby. And by the way, I didn't mention the Edward Snowden thing. He also revealed that the foreign politicians and officials who took part in the G20 summit meetings in London in 2009 had their computers monitored and their phone calls intercepted on the instructions of their British government hosts, according to The Guardian. Yeah, so he uncovered that too. You know, just figured, you know, that evil guy, yeah, he must just hate the United States, so he's uncovering stuff that the Brits did too. Okay, now, I want to continue discussing this sports arena basketball thing. I asked on Facebook, I asked on Twitter, who would you like to see win the game? Whom would you like to see win the game? And I would like to see that team or that team. So is it going to be the Miami Heat or the Spurs, right? San Antonio. Well, the Miami Heat got a bunch of money from taxpayers to help build a stadium. And the San Antonio Spurs got a bunch back when they were, you know, big time at the end of the 90s. So how do we view this, right? In Miami, by the way, Miami, they're already getting a subsidy. They want more of a subsidy. That's what it is, yeah. So they get $6.4 million a year in a subsidy. Now they want $17 million a year. Yeah, and the guy who owns the team is worth $5.7 billion. All right, but regardless of that, let's just work on the principle. First of all, obviously, it ruffles our feathers, baby, when we hear about this, because we say to ourselves, oh, this guy wants this amount of money, they're a successful business, da-da-da-da. Well, you know, whether they're successful or not successful, whether he's rich or not rich, really doesn't matter. It's whether or not someone should be forced to pay for the endeavors, the business endeavors of someone else. Right? And they should not. But how about not just the business endeavors? How about any of someone else? How about relaxation time of someone else? How about anything for someone else? Should someone be forced to pay for that? Why does it have to be that it's when it's a sports arena that people have their feathers ruffled? Right? Why can't it be to supposedly help the inner city? We'll help revitalize the inner city. We'll build new shops. We'll build them all. You know, just like the Chinese have built all sorts of new buildings that nobody's moving into. They built malls that, you know, have space for 500 businesses. They have 2. Nobody goes there. You know, that sort of thing, right? So it doesn't matter. It's the principle. That's the thing. It doesn't matter what level the person is in the social strata, how much money he gets when he's getting something from someone else. It's that he's getting something taken from someone else by a group of people that call themselves the lawmakers. Right? Yeah. So, my friend Sean writes, the state of Minnesota promised to subsidize the new Vikings stadium. The team that is second only to the Buffalo Bills in the number of Super Bowl losses. The one whose owner is billionaire Ziggy Wilf. The deal was to sell state-sponsored electronic poll tabs at bars and clubs. They're only pulling in 30% of the cash first projected. So guess who's on the hook to pick up the gap? You guessed it. The Minnesota taxpayer. It never ends. Absolutely. Absolutely. He's absolutely right. He says, not sure if owner Ziggy Wilf is a billionaire or is just worth hundreds of thousands, but it is definitely a government boondoggle. They just recite the mantra, it's a job creator. Yeah, and I said, you know, the worst thing that can happen for the taxpayers of a city is for their team to win a championship. Almost always, the team then asks for a new stadium, and often the owner threatens to leave if he doesn't get his partnership from the city. and anybody who opposes it is seen as antisocial. Well, how can you be against this? This is a social gathering place. Well, so is a punk rock club. I used to go to the Rathskeller in Kenmore Square. Some of the most legendary bands of all time appeared there. The Jam, XTC, The Cars, The Zulus, The Pixies. They were all there. Should that be kept up if it can't attract enough people? No. Should I say, hey, rather than getting private people to assess whether or not this is a good value for investment, whether this helps enough people to make it not only stay afloat, but succeed and be prosperous and turn a profit because people like it and they're attracted to it, enough people say, this helps my life, I would like to go there. Rather than doing that, I'm going to say, I'm going to cut out all those considerations and force people to pay for it because I like punk rock. Right? It's amazing. Oh, Sean, thanks for the comment about Dick Cheney, too. He says, I love that they crawl to Dick Cheney in their search for truth. Lots of people love going to Hong Kong for myriad reasons. Absolutely. We're talking about Cheney saying, well, why would he go to China for help, that Snowden guy? I don't know. Very suspicious. Very suspicious, man. I think we ought to look at him very critically. I mean, he wasn't interested in helping us. In fact, he went to Iraq, and he didn't seem to like it. Why didn't he like it? I mean, we killed a lot of foreign people. Doesn't he like that? We got a lot of oil for companies, and we got a lot of money for defense contractors and, you know, helped set up American military bases all around there. What, he doesn't like that? What's wrong with that kid, huh? What's wrong with that kid, Snowden? Ah, traitor. That guy, I don't like him. So, now, there's more about the basketball thing. Because my friend Kevin on Twitter, I was talking about this thing with Miami and San Antonio Spurs and how they, you know, get taxpayer money. And I say, you know, I'd love to be able to root for these guys, but how can you root for teams that siphon money away? Well, everybody does it. Well, you know, it doesn't mean I have to root for it. So it's a weird thing. It's tricky, right? Well, Kevin Anderson, who, by the way, if you want to follow him on Twitter, he is known as Free Market Kev. You can follow me on Twitter as Way Awesome, Super Cool. No, just kidding. It's Guard Goldsmith. But Kevin Anderson, he deserves some followers. He's pretty sharp. He says, I'm like, yeah, you know, they want to get people's money. He says, or get people to give up their homes and businesses through eminent domain, like what happened with the New Jersey Nets. So I brought up a point, and I thought it was a pretty good one, that essentially I said, you know, all government actions are in one form or another, another form of eminent domain. Because whether it's the taking of property, physical property, or it is, I said, at heart, all government operations are based on a form of eminent domain, be it cash or land, they will take it, the so-called lawmakers. And it's not just cash or land. It's your time. Because through regulations, the government will take it. And that's your property, too. Your time on earth is your property. It's a seizure. It's a taking. And they're not compensating you for it. So whether it's physical property, whether it's monetary property, it's yours. And the concept of property and the right to property is merely a term that human beings have, through trial and error, come up with to essentially say, hands off, this be mine, that be yours. Respecting that principle, that organically derived concept of, that's yours, this is mine, I worked on this is mine, you worked on this is yours, I own me, you own you, I own my time, you own your time. Those principles are not there because they were articulated by some philosopher who said, I think we're going to come up with a word called for property, bronk. No. They are organic to human interaction, generally speaking. Because when somebody takes something from somebody else when he's a little kid, violence tends to happen. And, of course, taking is violent. So we learn at an early age not to screw with somebody else's stuff, not to screw with somebody else's body, and not to force him to do things that we want him to do. So the takings that the government does here, whether it's through eminent domain or someone's money or regulating businesses that might be in an area, oh, you can't have that kind of business. That doesn't fit our mold around that stadium or whatever it might be. Whatever business you've got, those are takings. That's the way government operates. It's the only way. We'll return next hour and discuss this further. Liberty Conspiracy.
I'm a cloud drifting by, dripping tears from the sky. I'm a snail without a shell, leper with a golden bell. I've got nowhere to go. I'm a stray cat on the roam, choking on a chicken bone for a home sweet, no sweet home. For a root, for a leaf, for a branch, for a tree, for something, somebody that reminded them of me. Walking on, humming to the same old song. Lowercase society, tied to no community. A kingdom without a king, with no sense of belonging. For a root, for a leaf, a tree, for something, somebody that reminded them of me. Running with my roots pulled up, caught me cold so they could cut. What there is left of love. I'm ruthless, I'm ruthless. Run.
Hour number two. Welcome to hour number two, and welcome back to Liberty Conspiracy Radio on the Liberty Radio Network. Nice to have you here, one and all. I'm Gardner Goldsmith, and we're going to continue on a subject that I really want to discuss and sort of delve into the economics behind this, the ethics of it as well. It's about sports arenas, in this case, basketball arenas, the Miami Heat and the San Antonio Spurs, and thinking about rooting for the teams as they play. This is game 19 of the NBA Finals. Very exciting. And it's all tied up, 9 games each. And they both were at 6 games each just last hour, but they both won 3 games in the past hour. So now it's amazing. It's 9 games each, and they're in the final game, game 19.
So it's going to be really cool. So check it out. But I'm a big fan of basketball, right? I'm Gardner Goldsmith. Thank you for joining us and so on and so forth. I hope you go to libertyconspiracy.com and all that stuff. Okay, so I want to sort of carry this on as if I'm doing a linear podcast all in one piece. And we'll have our commercial breaks and we'll come back hopefully and give you some information on economics. I mentioned that in Miami, the Miami Heat gets subsidized $6.4 million a year and a deal with the county, Miami-Dade County, and then they want to up it. This just came out. They want to up it to $17 million a year, right? Oh, yeah. Now, in the meantime, on the other side of things, the San Antonio Spurs got a stadium subsidized through taxpayer money that they did in late 90s, early 2000s, right? Okay. So, neither team... And, you know, I'm not even going to mention, you know, the wealth of the people who own them or anything like that. I mentioned that in the last hour. That shouldn't really be a factor. The question is, should government be taking money from taxpayers to subsidize something that is a private endeavor? Now, in this case, what they say is that it's a private endeavor, it's a really big deal, and it will really bring money to the local community. It will help the local community. Now, in some cases, instead of it being a big deal that will help the local community, they say, oh, well, we're going to directly help the local community, and we're going to create new shops, new businesses, build a new street. We're going to brick down this thing that's a regular driving street, and it's going to be a walking street, and all the local shops are going to be helped that way. Or they'll say, well, you know, we got this this upstart business, and they need to get a loan, so we're going to start that, and that will help the local community. Or they'll say, we got a train. We're into you like a train, Richard Butler. He's, of course, the lyricist for the Psychedelic Furs. So we are going to start a train. And that's going to help the local, yeah, you got it, the local community. I don't know why not the community. It's got to be the local community. At least that sort of indicates a little something, a little spark of ingenuousness rather than disingenuousness, right? So what they're saying is, essentially what they're telling you is the people near the railroad will make some money if they have some shops and stuff, right? Because people would be getting off, they'll buy, you know, soda or whatever, you know, coffee shop place or whatever, right? Mm-hmm. Gas stations, maybe people gas up near the trains when they're driving home. Yeah, okay, right, sure. So what they're saying is the people who ride on the trains and the people who have shops near the stops for the trains will make money at the expense of what? Of whom? The other people who don't use the trains, who subsidize them. Right? Exactly. This is what happens. Oh, yeah, we're going to build a stadium. It'll help everybody. It'll be a great taxing. And, or, you know, they'll take it through eminent domain. Right? So, I think this fascinates me. Because, you know, I'm sitting here and I'm looking at Dick Cheney trying to do character assassination on Edward Snowden. And by the way, it seems that politicians are already, I mentioned this to someone, a friend on Facebook, seems that politicians are very, very ready to assassinate anything that opposes their power base. Any of the assumptions that they're putting out there, you can't question them. They'll either try to assassinate your character, or like President Obama, the great civil libertarian, they'll just assassinate you altogether without trial. So, you know, the government does most of the assassinating, right? Okay. So anyway, so while we're dealing with all that heavy stuff, I started thinking about basketball, and I thought, well, you know, it's really no different on principle, whether it's a big thing or a little thing. But what are the economics behind it? We started to talk a little bit about that. So let's get into that a little bit more, all right? So I want to turn to, I think... National Taxpayers Union has done a pretty decent job with this. So here's one. Stadiums and subsidies. Home run for wealthy team owners, strikeout for taxpayers. This was from 2007. Andrew Moylan writes, M-O-Y-L-A-N. Over the next several years, residents of New York City will be compelled to cough up a minimum of more than $200 million in subsidies to help build a new baseball stadium for the beloved, reviled, and always newsworthy New York Yankees. This story is different not because ordinary taxpayers are shouldering a significant burden for a franchise worth more than $1 billion, unfortunately. That's all too common these days. The dubious distinction is that taxpayers' $200 million will cover less than 20% of the total cost of the stadium. Not only is it remarkable that a stadium costs so much, but it's almost as remarkable that taxpayers aren't footing a larger portion of the bill. Just as many of their players have set records in the field, the Yankee brass is setting one off the field. They are constructing what could be America's first billion-dollar stadium. With estimates ranging as high as $1.3 billion, the new Yankee Stadium is expected to be the most expensive ever built on U.S. soil, both in real and inflation-adjusted terms. That is, at least until the next American stadium is designed and finished. However, Yankee Stadium isn't exactly an unthinkable anomaly. Though substantially more expensive than most, it is but the high end of a disturbing trend toward enormously expensive gold-plated stadium plans. The National Football League's San Diego Chargers, a franchise worth a mere $678 million, recently announced that estimated construction costs for the team's new home have doubled from the original of $400 million in 2002 to $800 million today. Meanwhile, in the nation's capital of D.C., Major League Baseball's Washington Nationals franchise, worth some $440 million, is building a $700 million stadium. As gross stadium construction costs rise rapidly, so will gross taxpayer costs. As mentioned above, New Yorkers will pony up more than $200 million, San Diegans roughly $400 million, and D.C. residents about $600 million. Just 20 years ago, that large a taxpayer subsidy would have been virtually unimaginable. In fact, Louisiana's famous Superdome, where the NFL's New Orleans Saints play, cost more than $500 million in 2006 dollars to build in 1975. At the time, the stadium was thought to be an extravagant outlier in a world where stadiums seldom cost more than $200 million in 2006 dollars. This was put out in 2007, by the way. Roger Noyle and Andrew Zimbalist note in their seminal 1997 work on the subject, Sports, Jobs, and Taxes, quote, "For a long while, this project stood out as a wild anomaly. Today, it would fit nicely in the upper range of standard experience," end quote. The Superdome, 100% financed by taxpayers, was indeed a harbinger of things to come. Virtually every economic study of the issue has found that publicly funded stadiums are, at best, an inefficient investment of taxpayer dollars for the meager benefits produced and, at worst, massive payments to rich team owners and players at the expense of ordinary taxpayers. Much of the spending attracted by new stadiums simply is shifted from entertainment spending that already existed in other venues, such as theaters and restaurants. Furthermore, large portions of the subsidy leave the city in the pockets of owners and players who live in far-flung suburbs. And finally, proponents of publicly funded stadiums often point to jobs created by stadiums while completely overlooking the destructive effects of higher taxes on job growth and economic performance elsewhere in the regional economy. We'll continue to discuss this further when we return.
But I'll tell you what I got. You see? I was growing up. I got the inside scoop. I used to watch all the older fellas work down the block. That's right, when they used to work, I used to watch. And when I watched, I learned the lover call, baby. If you wanna do it right. Up and down, side to side. Baby, we can do it for a night. Don't hold me back. Now you gotta look sharp, fellas. Oh, and you gotta act right. You see, no woman in the right mind's gonna waste your time if you ain't on time. Let's not talk about how I know that. I'm just here to pass down what I know to you. You see, when I was growing up, I got the inside scoop. I used to watch all the older fellas work down the block. That's right, when they used to work, I used to watch. And when I watched, I learned the lover call, baby. If you wanna do it right. Lick it up side to side. Baby, we can do it for a night. Don't hold me back. Hold me back. Woo! Yeah. That's right, I love it when I love a call, baby. Do you like the love a call? I love the love a call.
We're back, Liberty Conspiracy Radio, LG Grande here with you. Hope you're having a great night. Yes, lots of sports stuff going on, lots of sports talk. It's all sports radio. And I haven't even opened up the Skype line yet. I'm getting great feedback from folks on Facebook. Thanks very much for joining us on the Liberty Radio Network. And also, I hope you'll check out our podcast. The Podomatic site is the host for our podcast. We actually spend a lot of money a year on our site, so I hope you will check that out. And also, yeah, you know, if you want to contribute to help us pay for the site, that's always welcome. I should mention that. That is at the upper right-hand corner of the Liberty Conspiracy Reddit website. It says support the conspiracy. That's key. I should mention it more often, and I don't. And so if you like what we do and you think we're getting through to some of the youngsters out there, well, then, yeah, feel free if you want to toss some money our way. Sean Jensen's funny, man. He's talking to me on Facebook. He just posted a cut by McCluskey on my Facebook page. I'm like, dude, holy smoke, man. It's a song called Dethink to Survive. Dethink to Survive! Oh, great. So good. It's funny. The lead singer of McCluskey, he started doing a lot of running. He was a little bit heavier. Now he's a lot thinner. He sort of reminds me of who's the British dude who does... He does, he's the guy behind Idiot Abroad, and he started The Office and all that stuff. Anyway, he reminds me of that guy for some reason. I don't know why, but anyway, McCluskey no longer exists, just to let you know, and it's not really that important. They are now called Future of the Left, and they are a very good band. From the UK, my friend, yes. All right, so, talking about taxpayer subsidies for stadiums and how they're a bad deal, right? Okay. Now, a lot of times the politicians will tell you how, this is going to revitalize the downtown. Oh, it is? And what's strange about it is it really ties into the whole non-private property, private property is public property concept, which is erroneous. That, well, we live in this area, so... in order to help the area, we're going to force people to pay for something, right? So if you're in the minority, sorry, you're screwed. Now, when this is done on a local level, sometimes at least you can escape this. When it's done on a state level, it's harder to escape. When it's done on a national level, it's really hard to escape. This is one of the, I think, admirable things that at least the founders, the people who wrote the Constitution, understood, was that if you decentralized government decision-making and made the decisions on small levels, if people screwed up,
or they started to become tyrannical, you could flee, you could vote with your feet and get away. So there was a way to sort of compare these areas. But socialists, collectivists, don't trust the small group to handle their own problems. They don't trust the individual to handle their own problems. They don't think they can do it. They think there's this sort of touchy-feely way that, oh, we're all joining together. But no, that's called voluntarism. To help someone, no, you're hurting someone in order to help that person now. It's no longer voluntary if you're doing it through government. There's no real moral tie to goodness that someone has decided to help his neighbor. And there's no reason for the neighbor to reciprocate because the neighbor doesn't know who really helped him. The neighbor has not gotten money that was given to him voluntarily. The neighbor has gotten some sort of bogus stuff that they call charity or something, which is not real charity. It's government shoveling other people's money at him. So why should he feel like he is obligated to try to help out and pay back? Smaller communities tend to keep at least some of those ties together. The arguments that they give about these stadiums, big cities, you know, we got to have a big stadium because we're a big city. Well, you know, you're going to get more and more people hurt. And it's very difficult to flee because then you have other big cities that want to try to compete. We got to compete with that big city because we're a big city too. And, you know, we got to have a sports team. It's a community thing. Okay, so we're going to force you because we're the community. Oh, I thought I lived in a community. No, we're going to tell you what the community does. We're the government. But that's not the community. Oh, yes, it is. The community speaks through government. Why can't the community just speak through itself? And then if people think it's a good investment and it will help their lives, they could contribute to the cause of building the stadium. And then because they think it's a good investment, if it is, they'll get a return on their money. And only the people who risk the money would lose out. And then the areas that started these stadiums, if it turned out that the stadiums were beneficial, they would stay. And if they weren't beneficial to the community, they would go. And something else would take their place. And through trial and error, as things change in society and interests change, the punk rock club that was in Kenmore Square is gone now because people lost interest in it. I don't go there anymore. I can't stand out there in front and talk to Mitch, the old sax player who had a tracheotomy and used to sound like... Yeah, famous dude. Used to be the doorman at the Rat, Mitch. They used to have T-shirts of him. So they use this sort of argument, which is an anti-economic argument all the time. It's based on emotion. It has no results. As we mentioned, the National Taxpayers Union writes about it. They say virtually every economic study of the issue has found that publicly funded stadiums are, at best, an inefficient investment of taxpayer dollars for the meager benefits promised, and, at worst, massive payments to rich team owners and players at the expense of ordinary taxpayers. Much of the spending attracted by new stadiums simply is shifted from entertainment spending that already existed in other venues. Okay, yeah. So let's bring up an example. Let's say they say, we need a movie theater. And they happen to put it in a place that had live theater. What do you think will happen? Do you think the people will go to the live theater as often? Maybe. Maybe not. What if they say, hey, we need a really nice restaurant in this town? What do you think will happen maybe to the other restaurants? Maybe they'll continue, or maybe this new subsidized competition will harm them. What if it's not just a restaurant? What if it's something else? Right? Could be anything. So people shift their monies based on availability, and if the government starts to change what is available through subsidizing something, then yeah, people might start changing their behavior. So a train comes in, maybe fewer young people get their cars for a few years. Oh, I'll just ride my bike to the train station for a few years. What happens to the car dealers, used car dealers? They've got competition now. It's not in cars, but it's in transportation, just like these stadiums. It's in a form of entertainment. Yeah. Now, let's talk a little bit more about trains. I wrote in my book, Live Free or Die, And I have a lot of my dad's sayings in that. And my dad passed away a while ago, and I was thinking I know this is Father's Day, but it sort of passed out of my mind. But my dad was a great guy. So anyway, my dad has a lot of aphorisms that he came up with, and his name is on the book too, of Live Free or Die. And I think it's a really cool book. But when I come back, I'm going to read to you two pieces that I wrote back in 2002 about subsidizing, let's say, trains in this case, how it's going to help the community, right? I mentioned a little bit about this before, but I'll give you the layout about how the politicians try to do this stuff and the arguments they come up with and how we refute them as economic-minded people. We'll return. Liberty Conspiracy Radio.
Get up to Lancaster and hang out with everybody. Porkfest 10. Remember, in Lancaster, New Hampshire, it's up in the north. It's a beautiful spot. Mountains are awesome. The campsite is great. people running are great, and so many awesome speakers. I can't even tell. It's going to be a great time, baby. I'm Gardner Goldsmith, and this is Liberty Conspiracy Radio. Continuing our conversation about subsidizing certain projects, brought up the Miami Heat and the San Antonio Spurs sports things. We got New York Yankees. San Diego's been doing it. You know, everybody seems to get involved. As I mentioned, one of the worst things for taxpayers is to have a sports team that wins a championship. Bad news, baby, because they're going to want money to build a new stadium. And then what's interesting is they build these new stadiums, right? And then all the ticket prices go up. They go up and they build all these mega box seats and stuff. Yeah, man, it's just ridiculous. But there are lots of other ways that they say they're going to improve the local economy. You see, how can you stand against it? What are you, somehow against the community? You don't want to take your neighbor's money to build something? What is this? You're crazy. You don't want to take your neighbor's property away and have us do something with it? You're crazy. Are you mad? You possibly think that your neighbor should be left alone to invest based on his own risk assessment and preferences? What are you, nuts? You're crazy. No. They have to be group risk assessments and preferences. There's no such thing as the individual. You see, the individual can do nothing voluntarily. He must be forced. And that's one of the key things that you'll see, like, high school teachers do this a lot. I remember my freshman year in high school, Ms. Rossborough said, "No man is an island," comment for one of our finals. We had to write this stupid essay. I was like, no, actually, people are islands in a way. If they choose to contact others, they can build bridges to get in touch with others. But from your statement and from what you have done to us all year, I know what you're insinuating, that people need other people. And how dare you possibly speak against the idea of people being pushed together by other people, forcibly pushed together, taking their time away from them, taking their land away from them to do things that the group thinks is best. How dare you? No man is an island, don't you see? So we're the ones who are going to tell you how you're going to deal with anyone else from another island. We'll put you in touch with them, and we'll tell you what they can do together, what you can do. I hate that kind of stuff. Well, here's a guy who wanted to make sure that we were all brought together for a great noble cause. That's a little McCluskey reference, too, actually. Actually, that's Future of the Left, I think. Here it is. On December 20th, this is a letter I wrote to the National Telegraph, which I hope goes out of business soon. Sorry, Kevin Landrigan, he's a good reporter, but... On December 22nd, 2001, Representative Charlie Bass, for a while he wanted to be called Charlie, because he was your friend. He was your pal. He's a Republican pal. Yeah. Then he, after he went past his three terms, which he promised he would only do three terms, you know, and he was on, you know, like, term 80, he wanted to be called Charles.
I'm Charles Bass. How gauche you call me Charlie. No. I don't like my good and plenty anymore. I'm Charles.
Anyway, on December 22nd, 2001, Representative Charlie Bass assured voters in New Hampshire that he will continue to do all he can to promote and secure funding for a proposed commuter rail extension from Lowell, Mass. To Nashua, New Hampshire. He put that in the Telegraph. So I wrote to the Telegraph. I said, according to Mr. Bass, the rail proposal is, quote, a worthwhile project. It would result in 1,000 fewer cars on the highways each day. And, of course, it would employ people to do the work. Yes, you know, with money that could have been used to employ people to do work that people actually wanted, and they could have invested themselves with their own decisions. See how economics works, Charlie? It's crazy, isn't it? Voluntarism leads to greater prosperity. Because people choose with their own money. Weird. You get growth. Rather than retardation of an economy and slowing of the increase of people's living standards, or a decrease in them, generally. So, he says there'll be 1,000 fewer cars on the highway each day. It would help alleviate congestion and help ensure the growth and success of southern New Hampshire. Unfortunately, Mr. Bass has confused many things. And by the way, this goes for the highway system that the federal government put out there, too. He's confused many things, including what is practical, what is community-oriented, and what is sanctioned by the document he swore to uphold when he took office. It is ironic that just 2 weeks after Mr. Bass's letter discussing federal assistance for an MBTA, Massachusetts
Massachusetts Transit Authority New Hampshire project, the Amtrak Reform Council should announce its plans to keep afloat another public rail project, one that has been sucking like a leech off American taxpayers for 30 years. After $25 billion, I wrote this in 2002, and numerous promises to do a better job at a lower price, Amtrak has finally been exposed as the boondoggle it is. It has never, ever operated at a profit. It has always seized money from Americans in one portion of the nation in order to give rail transit to Americans in another part of the country, primarily those in the northeastern U.S. Ad campaigns have told us there's something about a train that's magic, while public rail makes our tax dollars disappear. Spokespeople have lauded the new high-speed train as a breakthrough, yet the people in the heartland will probably never ride one. Around the world, no fewer than 40 countries have been replacing similar government rail services with more efficient private systems. The Amtrak Reform Council may yet see the light. On January 11, 2001, it proposed that much of Amtrak's routes be offered to private companies to begin competitive service. While the federal government will still own the lines, this introduction of a sink-or-swim for-profit system may begin to expose the areas where rail service is and is not feasible. Well, you see, that's a little something. Peter Gordon of the University of Southern California wrote for the Reason Public Policy Institute that a downward spiral currently affects public transit. It worked best in a world of high concentration of origins and destinations and with large numbers of people too poor to own and operate an automobile. And by the way, there has never been a public transit system that has ever been in the black. Okay, so I got a response from some guy named Charlie Matthews. He responded to my criticism. Mr. Matthews states, while Mr. Goldsmith isn't impressed at the prospect of taking 1,000 cars off the highway every day, I sure am. What Mr. Matthews fails to understand is that the estimate noted above is not an established fact. It is a claim made by Mr. Bass, the proponent of the expenditure. In my initial letter, I stated, according to Mr. Bass, the rail proposal is a worthwhile project. It would result in 1,000 fewer cars on the highway each day. It would help alleviate congestion and help ensure the growth and success of Southern New Hampshire. The published piece, as edited by the Telegraph, broke the statement into two paragraphs, thus making it less clear that the sentences regarding 1,000 fewer cars and less congestion on New Hampshire roads were merely claims by Charlie Bass and not in any way accepted truths. Yes, that's one of the reasons why I would hope that the National Telegraph goes out of business, because they're a hardcore lefty paper, and I don't think they did that by any mistake. Mr. Matthews attempts to support his facile claim that the tax-funded extension is justified by noting that passenger rail is subsidized throughout the world. This is a tautology, a self-indictment of public systems. In fact, in over 40 countries, bankrupt tax-subsidized rail systems are being licensed out to private operators precisely because they are inefficient. While Mr. Matthews looks at a glorious future of tax-funded trains rolling out of Nashua, New Hampshire, many people in other nations, many certainly the same nations he noted that subsidized train service because it, quote, makes economic and environmental sense, have turned away from the government-run paradigm towards private initiatives. The claim that tax-funded rail systems make economic and environmental sense is patently false, totally insupportable, and makes for very risky political disputation. It is axiomatic that if something makes economic sense, it can sustain itself without the forced seizure of tax money from those who do not use it. Got a great quote from Edmund Kantosky, which I will provide to you later. And then a couple more items as we close off tonight's program. Don't forget, Porkfest. Hope to see you there. I'm going to try to make it up Wednesday.
Everybody wins as long as we remember there's a reason for incredible wealth.
Incredible wealth.
Incredible love.
matter. Life is just a dream, and nobody can judge us if we choose to face it gradually.
Gradually
makes everything right.
Because nothing can beat us.
Around, face our deepest fears. We imagine God is just a mental illness looming towards,
appearing towards
the end of our days.
The end of our days.
Think again, how could we be wrong? If supernatural creatures who control our fate, could anyone tell?
Could anyone tell?
Would anyone care?
Would anyone care?
Could anyone choose to die?
In the end, everybody wins. In the end, everybody wins.
The feeling snaps, the fool's behind. And back in the ground, we look at our hands and wonder aloud, could anyone choose to die?
In the end, everybody wins. In the end, everybody wins.
The feeling snaps, the fool's behind. Step back in the ground, we look at our hands and wonder aloud, could anyone choose to die?
In the end, everybody wins. In the end, everybody wins.
The feeling snaps, the fool's behind. Step back in the ground, we look at our hands and wonder aloud, could anyone choose to die?
Hey, hey, hey. All right. LG Grande here with you, continuing Liberty Conspiracy Radio. And you can follow me on Twitter. It's Guard Goldsmith on Twitter. Very cool. And yeah, and you can also follow me on Facebook. It's LG Grande on Facebook. We have our Liberty Conspiracy Facebook page, which is just the Liberty Conspiracy Facebook page. And yeah, so we've got a lot going on. Podomatic, iTunes, the Liberty Conspiracy podcasts are available there and in our internal player on the Liberty Conspiracy website. Okay, so this is today's Father's Day, right? Yeah, today is Father's Day. And so anyway, I got a picture of my dad on the back of my book. I'm looking at my dad. He was a good guy. Yeah, so anyway, so yeah. All right, so here's the thing that I'm discussing, and the economics of subsidizing sports things, sports you know, sports arenas, trains, all these things, right? It'll help. It's help. It's helpful. Okay. Even when they say help the infrastructure. Oh, really? So you're going to tax some people who don't go to that particular area, maybe by making this bridge or whatever. You're going to tax them so you can help those people in that little area. Oh, but it'll help everybody increase the tax base. Oh, really? Well, if it's that good an investment, then the people who have businesses there can ask for investors, and they can say, you know, this will increase traffic to our area. What do you think? Want to invest? There you go. I know, it's crazy. And it's called voluntary action. Voluntary economics. Yeah. All right, now, I mentioned that I had been in this debate in 2001 with Charlie Bass, who told me straight to my face at this Republican gathering one time, oh, I'm in favor of term limits. Just 3 terms, that's all I'll serve. He ended up serving like 6, and then he got knocked out, and then he went back one more, and then he got knocked out again. So
I was in this debate in the Nashua Telegraph, which edited my news, my letter, to make it look like part of it was factual when I was actually putting a quote in of a claim, quoting a claim, and there was no basis in fact for it. And so I responded once more with another message. And at the end of this message, I just mentioned a couple things. And I think this is valuable. If you ever get a chance, pick up the 1997 book called Makers and Takers. I've mentioned it before. It's Edmund Kontosky, C-O-N-T-O-T-A-S-K-I, Edmund Kontosky. And he writes, in the same way that profitable enterprise is supported voluntarily, though incidentally, by others because they benefit from it, every enterprise that can't make a profit is providing less benefit to society than its cost. Right? Right. It is doing more to consume wealth than to enrich the lives of others. It's a localized phenomenon. It's only the owner. But what happens when you get the government involved? Okay, well, let's continue with him. I don't want to draw too much away from what he's saying. But it is precisely to such enterprises and individuals that tax money is allocated, to those who offer less in return than they receive. Profitable enterprises don't need tax support, and those that aren't profitable don't deserve other people's money. By subsidizing the unprofitable, government acts against the minds and interests of free men. In the case of Amtrak, for example, the government has forced the taxpayers to buy billions of dollars worth of passenger rail service with their lack of patronage already indicated that they didn't want it. Right? So that's Edmund Kontosky, and I quoted him in my book, In Live Free or Die, which is available on Amazon. It came out in 2007, so the articles are not necessarily super new in it, but there's a lot of principle in there too. So I thought that was a big deal, right? If you want something, you can invest in it, right? If you think it's valuable. Another example, airport security. Oh, but that's the policing power. We need the government to keep us safe. Really? So you want to have someone be forced to pay for a service that you would like, which is the service of being kept safe, you think. You think they'll do that. And you want to make sure that not only you, when you say, I'm willing to pay it, I'm willing to have them there, but you want to force this on everybody else. Because if you don't, you don't think it will happen. But if you're in the majority, then do you really need to force the minority to pay for it? You have plenty of people. You could invest. Businesses themselves might possibly want to show that they're safe, especially if they have to pay insurance. So maybe, just maybe, they'd be incentivized to provide, security. And then if you wanted to fly with those airlines, you could make a true voluntary choice as to whether or not you wanted to have yourself groped. Here's a little story of a lovely lady who's only 15 years old, a kid. And this was just posted today, Sunday, the 26th of June, 2013. It was on the website boingboing.net. LAXTS officer. Yeah, you know it's going to be good. LAXTS TSA officer shames my 15-year-old daughter for her outfit. Mark Fraunfelder writes, this morning, a TSA officer at LAX humiliated and shamed my 15-year-old daughter. She is traveling with a group of high school students on a college tour, and we were not with her when he verbally abused her. Here's what happened. As my daughter described it in text messages to us, she was at the station where the TSA checks IDs. She said the officer was glaring at her and mumbling. She said, excuse me? And he said, you're only 15. You should cover up. In a hostile tone. I think this is ironic coming from the organization that could feel her up if they wanted to, anytime they wanted. You should cover up. All right, now get over there. Somebody's going to feel your butt.
What?
Yeah, as a woman, she's going to put her hand down the front of your pants. What kind of bra are you? Is that an underwire bra? Yeah, you got to go over to this line. Can't go. No, the metal detector. No. Well, you know, if we have a real problem, we're going to make you take your clothes off. Well, we might irradiate you. You can go over there, but what are you wearing, girl? You should cover up. Bunch of clowns. They don't even understand, you know. Anyway, this is according to her claim, and I believe her claim. I do not believe anything that TSA tells me. Maybe I would if I were voluntarily paying them my money, but they're taking it from me. So, if I don't want to pay, and if you don't want to pay, you decide, hey, I'm not going to pay. See what happens. Anyway, she says, excuse me. And he says, you're only 15. You should cover up, in a hostile tone. She said she was shaken up by this abusive manner. Writes Mark Fraunhalder, I'm including the above photo of the outfit my daughter was wearing when the TSA officer shamed her. Doesn't really matter what she's wearing. But anyway, it's just she's got a checkered shirt. It's open. She's got a blouse tank top thing on. She has like tights on and whatever. She has long hair. So there she is. It says, it doesn't matter what she was wearing, though. Right on. Because it's none of his business to tell girls what they should or should not wear. His creepy thoughts are his own problem, and he shouldn't use his position of authority as an excuse to humiliate a girl and blame her for his sick attitude. Our friend Maureen Herman dropped by our house today, and we told her what happened. Maureen is the bass player for Babes in Toyland, the executive director of Project Noise, and a co-founder of A is 4, a women's rights advocacy group. She wrote the following response on Facebook, and it neatly sums up why this TSA officer's behavior is very wrong. Quote, absolutely inappropriate, harassing, aggressive, creepy, unprofessional, and Taliban-y thing he did. Cover-up is a dangerous cultural attitude that fuels more than rude comments. All right. Well, we don't need any of that stuff. And he has a quote from Hillary Clinton in here. So, but maybe he's using that in a recursive way to show, hey, all you people who are for women's rights and all that stuff, and, you know, equal treatment and stuff, and, you know, how you think, you know, the male-oriented, male chauvinism stuff just, you know, perpetuates a certain cultural attitude, and it's not just each single guy just acting out his own fantasies because he can't help it because he's a hormonal, raging, you know, maniac. That there are cultural things that can be done to hold these people back. I think, you know, sometimes, yeah, you can do that sort of thing. And sometimes it goes way overboard, and, you know, guys are often depicted as bad guys. I don't know. Guys are often bad guys in some countries that dominate women. So how do you strike the balance? I don't know. But one thing's for sure. We don't need to have taxpayer-funded security guards who have the power to feel up that girl at any time they want, telling her that she's the one who's dressed inappropriately. She's the inappropriate one. And guess what? If you don't like it, what are you going to do? Welcome to government. You want an alternative? Think freedom. Think liberty. Think libertyconspiracy.com, baby. Yeah. All right. Thank you very much for listening. See you tomorrow night. Be seeing you.
Either you are one, you're falling apart, and it opened a can of worms. And the guilt in my hand, and I know it looks bad, but believe me, I'm innocent. And I'm fearful of flying, and flying is fearful of me. And I covered my eyes when she told me the news, turning me on with my lightsaber cocksucking blue. Are you coming? 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 Nicotine stain on account of a crutch, and I'm aching from fucking too much. And I know what I do, and it all points to you. Did you sell me to Wanderlust? And I'm fearful of flying, and flying is fearful of me. And I covered my eyes when she told me the news, turning me on with my lightsaber cocksucking. Are you coming? Are you coming?